You know, I know you got some questions there, Tim, but I want to tell a story about Pittsburgh that I noticed the Stanley Cup champions. I still call them a couple of years, but after the fight, who was the fight? Who was the fight now?
The second game. It was Ben Chiarano, and it was Kapanen and Jared McCain fought.
So. Oh, yeah. And there was a little schmozzle there. And the whole Pittsburgh club stood up and banged their sticks. And it was unbelievable.
Like, yeah, it was like after the after they'd served their time.
Yeah, and they were
coming in.
Yeah. Yeah, and the whole team stood up and banged their sticks for the guy. I mean, McCain, that was pretty good. But I'll tell you what happened with the Bruins. When I first went to the Bruins, after a guy have a pretty good fight, you know, they would just kick the gloves over and toss the gloves over and stick in. And, you know, and especially this second year, don't you ever go in and just throw the gloves. You take the gloves. You pick up the gloves. There's the guy who went out and fought for you guys. He says, you pick up the stick, you pick up the gloves, you hand them to him, and you hand them inside and give him the thumbs up. I said, because he's the fight. Don't go in, throw them in as if he's nothing. And I had Patty Considine, and I'm picking up names now. Forget the other guy's name. And they had two guys that were there. They were there forever. And
In the penalty box.
And they, you know, they were used to that and everything. I just looking for excuse to get rid of them, eh? To get the two Irish guys and their Patty guy and the other guy, forgetting. But anyhow, here I saw them before the game. They're eating a great big submarine, and you know how I hate to see guys eating before the game. It's both. And I remember Frost says, "These guys have been in the box." I said, "I don't know how long they've been. Get around, get Patty in there, and the other." And Patty used to pat the guys on them. Patty used to pat our guys. He used to pat him on the back, and we felt good. The guys, that's the way to treat guys. And Pittsburgh, after they served the penalty and they skated to the boards, every one of them stood up and banged their sticks and welcomed the guy to the bench.
And I hate to say the Leafs didn't do anything.
Well, I guess they're not. Well, they're not used to fighting too much.
Right.
What's Kapanen
doing?
Doesn't
happen very often.
Clifford, hey, listen, when he's there. Their mentality has changed. You watch, there'll be more when the Clifford's around. When he first went to L.A., he was drafted. And I said, I really like that Clifford. And Ron said, who? I said, Clifford. And I always liked that guy. And boy, I'll tell you, boy, I'm not saying that he hurt that goalie the other night there. But, it, you know, sort of.
Well, you know, you hate to say the guys that were calling the game saying, oh, he didn't see him. He didn't see a 6'3" goalie roaring out to the front of the net.
Anyhow, I like that Clifford, and that's the way we used to treat the fighters when they were in Boston and we had a lot of fights. You picked up the gloves, you hand them to him and said, give them the thumbs up.
Okay, Dad, do you want to start with some questions?
Yeah,
we got some questions from your Twitter account, which is up to over 800 and some thousand people following you. So it's Nora Marps at nmarps91. When you were coach of the Bruins, and was there any trade that your GM made that really annoyed you, whether it be a bad trade for your team or a trade involving a player you really liked leaving Boston?
No, Harry, I got to admit, made some great trades. Someday we'll go with the trade. He made some dandy trades that kept us going. But there's two guys I could have worked harder on. I should have kept Walt McKechnie. He was a big guy. He was 6'3". He was great on draws. He killed penalties. He would have been great as a third and fourth centerman. And then he could have jumped up to be the first one. You know what I mean? He was terrific. I could have worked, and we give him away for nothing. I mean, just. And I think he ended up in Colorado.
Coaching him a couple of years later in Colorado.
Yeah, but he would have been great with Boston. He would have been perfect third and fourth centerman. I should have worked harder on him. And Harry would have went along with him. Harry was the type of guy, just win, baby. You lose, you're gone. And we kept winning. He would have been great. But the one I really think that I really made a mistake on, and I think it cost me a Stanley Cup, was Greg Shepherd from North Battleford, Saskatchewan. And every time I drive up north, I see white cattle. I think of Greg all the time because he told me he had a white cattle that they were always white all the time. He was perfect. He used to pay the point on our power play. He'd kill the penalties. He'd take all him and Rattella. He was perfect. And why I didn't work on it No, I Harry, if I had said no, I'm sure, and I had worked on it, Harry would have kept him, but I didn't. And to this day, I still think that Montreal wouldn't have beat us in that seventh game if I had Greg Shepherd. So if there's two guys that I regret that I didn't work harder on, that Harry let go, was Walt McKechnie and Greg Shepherd.
So, Dad, you just mentioned, you know, Greg Shepherd and John Rattel used to take all the important draws. You have to tell the story about the face-off just inside the blue line.
Well, I know the one you're talking about.
And John Rattel was cut, and then he came
sweat
to the
bench. Coming on. So anyhow, I would say there was about 45 seconds left. And you know, 45 seconds, you got to make sure everybody knows. So I call time, and I call him over. And he's standing there. What a warrior he was, boy! He was beautiful. He was like a Vadnay or Beliveau. Like I used to call him our Beliveau. And the funny thing is, he won the Lady Bing. And I used to say all the time, "I don't want any Lady Bings. I don't want any Lady Bings in our club." So he won the Lady Bing, and he came in very quietly after a game, and he said, "Don, I'd like to talk to you, Donnie." He called me Donnie, and he said, "I am very sorry." And I think he. What is he sorry about? He says, I won the Lady Bing. I said, Johnny Busick won it in our club, and Ricky Milton won. And anyhow, he was a great guy. So anyhow, the face-off. You know, I have to picture this face-off. It's 45 seconds to go. We're winning by one goal. And there's the other guy that's facing off with him is a left-hand draw, and I know he's going to try to pull it back. And John is a left-hand, John Rattel is a left-hand draw too. So I want him to go with him. I want him and shoot the puck back. I didn't want it at our end. So I call him over, and the guys are listening. And I could still see him looking. He never looked at me, looking like he's straight ahead. And there's blood pouring down, the sweat. And I said, look, John, what I want you to do is when you don't try to win the draw, pull it back on our end, shoot it, and it'll go down on the other team's end, and the game will be over. It's just Dundee. I have that figured out. and they got the camera on at our bench, and the players are absolutely dying. Hear me, punker that never took a draw in his life, telling John Rattel how to take a draw. It's just Dundee. I have that figured out. And he felt bad after he came in.
He would feel bad. He would, you know, he's probably being sincere.
He saw all the guys laughing at me. And I started to laugh myself. And I said, punker me, never took a draw in my life. I'm telling one of the best face-off guys in the world how to take a draw.
Okay, Dad, so I'm going to ask you, who was your favorite referee while you were...
I never had a favorite referee, but close to it.
Okay, well, this is from Fish at FeedTheFish79. That's a good name because you like fish, right?
I love my goldfish. I watch it every night. My tank is not quite clear. I worked on it last night before I went over. I had too much air in it.
Remember I said you got to watch you don't put too much air in it because it gets the water going too much.
Yeah, but it's not current. It's just too much. I don't know. Anyhow, I fooled around with it. I went and bought a new pump.
Air pump.
And it was too much air coming in, so I got it. No, I don't know. Anyhow, my goldfish, they're getting giants because every time I go down to watch a game or I go down to...
Oh, they have you trained well, Dad.
And they know when I'm coming down and
they feel
the
vibration on the stairs and they're up to the front.
So I sit down and they're looking at me and they're going bananas and I can't enjoy the game. I got to go and feed them. They are monsters. And you know, their linehead Arandas, they're hard to raise.
They are.
And I work...
You change the water routinely. One thing, folks, Dad is a very dedicated fish owner. He does his partial water changes. He doesn't overfeed them. I know somebody, just a little bit. They always eat all the
bananas.
Food.
Bananas. I mean, I think they're coming out to attack me.
And then when you leave, every time you get up, you have to feed them.
I have to feed, and before I go to bed at night, and they know when the TV goes off. They know, and they sit, they stare at me, and they start making a lot of noise and everything. And I tell you, those fish, they're beautiful fish. I mean, they are big lionhead arandas. The hardest, would you say, Cindy, the hardest fish in the world to raise?
I've worked in a lot of pet stores, and lionhead arandas, they are so temperamental in their swimming bladders because they have to They come up and they float all the time.
Yeah.
You have to do partial water changes. And I mean, oh, goldfish, they're so easy. No, folks, not really. Not the fancy ones.
No, and if they do float a little, you sit there thinking, is he struggling to go to the bottom,
or is he just relaxing?
I don't know. Whatever I'm doing right, in the tank, but it's not.
Well, we had to explain to you, stop cleaning your filter so much, because sometimes you love cleaning your filter, right?
And no, it's not clear. It's clear still. Anyhow, what was the question again?
Who's your favorite ref?
Referees. Oh, referee.
Well, of course, it was John McCauley, everybody's favorite referee. This guy knew how to control the game. You can say, well, how did the referee control the game? Well, I'll tell you how. When they had one referee, they could control the game. They can't now. But back then, like say the Boston Bruins, which we usually did, get up 5-1 or something, you know we're going to get the next four penalties. And I remember one time we were up 5-1 in Washington or something. We get penalty after penalty after penalty. So I said, I remember saying to Johnny Holland, is that enough? And he said, yeah, it's enough. You know, it was enough. He'd given us a penalty. He was every time Philly would play Boston, they would have John McCauley because we all respected him. He was one of those guys that we all respected him. I don't know how I ever did it, and I could never do it cold. But I'd be able to walk along the boards there. And he let me do it for a while. And you know, Tim, everybody used to like to come to see Scotty was colorful and pretty, you know, the guys were colorful. Like, remember when we went to the Boston Red Sox? We actually went to see Billy Martin.
Yeah, the one game we went to see Billy Martin.
And
remember that happened that game.
Oh, yeah. And let's see, Reggie Jackson was in the right field. And I said to you, I said, he's not going to put up with that. Because what Reggie Jackson did when they were changing pitchers, he leaned and talked to the Red Sox pitchers in the
And there was a couple of pop flies.
And
he didn't try.
I said to Tim, I said, there's no way that he's going to put up with that. And during the game, I've never seen this before or since, during the game, he sent out Paul Blair. I never forgot that. And Reggie Jackson says, what? I'm being taken out of the game?
He walked all the way out. He ran.
And he said, you're out. And Reggie Jackson, what are you, nuts? You know, you wait till the end of the inning. And he went in. And boy, did they have a fight in the dressing room, eh?
Yeah, we were.
Or in the dugout.
Yeah, we were about 10 rows, 15 rows back. So we Dad said, wait till this happens. And we didn't see it because we were behind.
Yeah,
him,
we could see
but we could hear it.
And we could hear it. So anyhow, that was a great. We never forgot that game. And Yogi Berra, I saw pictures of it later. Yogi Berra was the only thing that kept them from punching one another.
Yeah.
So
John McCauley, he kind of let you do that to a point.
He let other coaches have, you know. But we respect the guy. If he said get down, then you got down. I remember one time one of our guys, Stan Jonathan, I'll tell you, he got a 2-minute minor, 5-minute major, 10-minute misconduct, and the game misconduct. So I never forgot, I think I said this before. What do? You win a fight, you get thrown out of the game. He says, that never happened to you, Cherry. He always had a good one like that. And you know, like I said, he was the best. And he got all the tough games. And he was doing a Russian game and Canada game, and he was in a restaurant or a bar, and some drunken guy come up and hit him in the eye, and that was the end of his refereeing. But
his son's a big shot.
Is Wes? Wes is he's a colorful guy too. Wes is a good referee, but that was the end of his refereeing, and he became referee in chief. And I remember the one game. Remember Koharski and Schoenfield went at it.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic.
Yeah. I tell you a funny story. Before I tell that story, I was standing there all dressed up. And the guy came to me and he said, are you the singer for the national anthem? Boy, when McLean heard that one, he thought that was funny. So I was there. I was right there. And they were going at it. And he said, have another donut, you fat pig, and all that stuff and everything. And so they wanted Ron McLean to be the referee. Because he was a referee, eh?
Right. The refs, what happened was they didn't suspend Schoenfeld for and because Koharski thought he bumped him, but he didn't.
You know.
And then he says, "Have another donut, you fat pig."
Yeah, I know.
And then the referee said, "Well, if you don't suspend him, you're not backing us. We're not going to go out."
Yeah.
So they went on strike for one game in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, and John McCauley, this is that's how good he was. They got two amateur guys. Remember, they looked terrible.
They could barely skate.
Instead of putting them on in sweaters or something. Anyhow, and the players were pretty good. They didn't go offside and stuff like that. It was pretty good. And he ran the game from the penalty box. And he stood on a box and over the glass and told these guys what to do. That's how good he was and everything like that. And
So you were saying, though, that they wanted Ron McLean to...
And that's an inside story that they wanted Ron McLean to, because they would have respected Ron because Ron was a real referee.
He
did referee for a long time. Must tell the stories about him. But anyhow, he was my favorite referee, and it was sad that and he died very young. And he was in he comes from Georgetown, Ontario. He was quite a lacrosse guy. They won championships. He loved lacrosse. And he used to talk about it all the time. And something happened, he got sick or something, and I don't know all the particulars, and he died very young.
But let me ask you, would coaches of the teams, would they look to see who's going to be the referee and the linesman? Well, like, did that set the tone for the game, or?
No, we couldn't. I couldn't say it. Ron Wicks, we never got along with Ron Wicks, and
so there was particular, like, you knew
no,
that
we
this.
No, I couldn't have the players think about the referees and the linesmen in that.
No.
If you have, if you start, well, we can't play this your way because Ron Wicks is. Or Bob, Rob Myers. What was that guy's name? Myers.
Bob Myers.
Bob Myers. You know, funny thing. No, I better not tell about that. But you know what? How about I say it this way? The same refereed, and I watched the game with Toronto and Montreal, and it was in overtime, and I remember Tiger Williams got a boarding penalty, and everybody, what a boarding penalty they've been letting murder get away with, and they scored the winning goal on Tiger, and I remember the players had to grab Tiger, and Larry Robinson had to come over and hold Tiger from attacking the same referee. I'm just saying it, the same referee, and the same referee had the seventh game, the same referee that called a boarding penalty had the seventh game against Montreal. Now, I'm not saying that we didn't deserve too many men on the ice. We deserved that. But the two penalties before, I thought, this guy's trying to get this guy. They're trying to get him back. We were winning 3-1 or something. And I said, this guy is trying to get them back in the game. And sure enough, well, we lost with too many men on the ice. My fault. But before that, I remember Jean Ratel got a high-sticking penalty.
Really?
Lady Bing trophy. And I remember Gainey running at him. And as he went by, he just brought a stick up.
To protect himself.
Himself, and he got a two-minute minor. And I remember Redmond just took a guy out. And I said, this guy's trying to get these guys back in the game. Same referee. We won't mention who the referee is because he's gone now. But it was the same referee, and I don't know what to say. I'm just saying it was the same referee. And John McCauley, I wish he was alive. I wish he had had the game. He should have had the game because he would have been fair. He was my favorite referee, and he was everybody's favorite referee.
Okay, Dad, this is from Captain Clayton at Cap'n Clay, okay? And he wants to know, if hockey didn't exist, what would you have done with your life?
Well, I'll tell you, the last 5 years I played, believe this or not, folks, I was on 4 championships and 1 final. I remember the Pittsburgh final. That was the only one we didn't win. And I remember a guy, I forgot his name now, a big defenseman, and he'd gone through the whole series and everything, not hurt, and he jumped. When they won the cup and the whistle went, he jumped and he caught his foot and fell and mashed his whole face. Anyhow, 36 years old, and I was working at construction. My friend, Captain Whitey Smith, he was the foreman and everything. So I was happy and everything. And I remember Joe Crozier, and we just won a championship. I flew out to Vancouver. Vancouver Canucks, we went through the whole playoffs without a loss, and we won the championship. We had a better team than the NHL. So anyhow, I said, and I was in Joe's office one time, and he said, and he never answered the phone, and the secretary came in, he said, so-and-so, nah, I'll phone him. And I thought, if I ever phone him and he doesn't answer my call, that's it, nuts. I was nuts. I had to be nuts. So by the gall, I won the championship, and I phoned Joe, and he didn't answer. And so I phoned him again. You know, I didn't want to retire. And I phoned him the third time, and he never answered my call. And I said, I put in the paper, I retire. And I remember Rose saying, no, let me get this right. You don't have any injuries. You just won a championship, and you're retiring because a guy won't answer your call. He said, yeah. And so I was working on construction. So one of the reasons I would have, what I would have been, I would have been a construction worker. And what happened was, and I'll never forget it, guys were being laid off. It was in 1980. Guys were being laid off. But I thought I was pretty good. Whitey Smith was a friend of mine. He was the foreman. And I remember the day, and it wasn't for the work. It was because
it was early 70s, and there was a recession started.
So anyhow, I remember Whitey cried. Here's a guy that had gone through the war, through North Africa, Sicily, Italy. What happened is we get in the room. We want to say goodbye to Doug Smith. He was a good carpenter and everything, but he's been laid off. And so then I'm in the room, and two other guys got laid off with me. And Whitey said, I'd like to, and he started to cry. Whitey. So I went to Mr. McGregor, the guy that kept track of all the stuff and everything. I forget what he called. What do you call a guy that kept track of the books and everything?
Accountant.
Accountant, I guess. And we'd always give a quarter all every week to the flower fund if somebody was in the hospital. So I went to him as a joke, and I said, can I have my quarter back, Mr. McGregor? And he thought I was serious. So anyhow, I was laid off, and, well, I might as well tell a story. I established myself as the first of all, I went painting. For $2 an hour. It was ridiculous. I was using my own car. It was costing me money. And then I became... For Valley Cadillac, I established myself as the world's worst car salesman. I was hoping it would rain, that nobody would come in. And when I see when you and I go to the game, I see the guys in there at 9 o'clock. It's open till 9. I was hoping nobody'd come in, and they used to give me a house deal and the whole deal. I was terrible. I remember a guy, Wegmans
Sibley's.
No, it was Wegmans. Remember Wegmans?
Yeah,
it was a grocery store. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, we get a big Cadillac. And he said, all I want is a white top. So I made sure it had white top or wood, and it come through with a black top. I never forgot that. I was so worried. So anyhow, I went to him, and I'm laying in bed. I'll never forget some. I'm going to say this just is God's truth. I'm laying in bed, and I usually have a nap like a hockey player. And I said, I don't even deserve a nap. I mean, Rose was happy with the Cadillac. We got it, but I was terrible. She didn't know how unhappy I was. And I got down on my knees and I said, Lord, what am I going to do? Here I am, 36 years old. I said, I can't get a job to make any money. I got a family. I said, I swear to God, I know this is hard to believe, but this is a true story. The light come on. I mean, this sounds ridiculous, I know. But this is a true story. The light come on, and somebody said, go back to hockey. And I never even dreamed of going back to hockey. And I got up, and I went. I told Rose downstairs, I said, I'm going to go back to hockey. And, you know, I was about 20 pounds overweight. And I phoned Doug Adams. He only dropped in when he used to love to golf in North Carolina. And he only dropped in that day, and I got him, and he thought, well, why not? What has it got to lose? I live here in Rochester. I'm captain. It'd be good PR. And I worked I ran and ran and ran. And I remember I had a bike, and I had the thing turned down as tough as it could. You could smell rubber all over the neighborhood. And when it got light, I went up to the attic, and it was hot up there. And she said, you're going to die. You're going to die of a heart attack. And I said, yeah, I'm going to die, or I'm going to make this club. So I tried to make the comeback, and I just can't get it. Been off too long. And so I remember I phoned her from Stratford. We had an exhibition game in Stratford, Ontario. And I said, I just can't get it. I said, and she's, well, give it one more try and just come back to me. And if any guy is making a comeback, it'll just come back like that. And it just came back. And I remember the first four games, we were on the road playing the South with Rochester. I made the club. I remember going in. They had me in the rookie room, and I remember the guy, the trainer there, gave me gloves with holes in them. And the rookies, I think, felt sorry for me, old guy sitting there. And, you know, and they kind of encouraged me, believe it or not. They felt sorry for me. So I'm playing with the gloves and everything like that, and I made the club because I had to make the club because I was better than any of the guys. So we went down south, and I'm not bragging when I say this, and I was playing terrific. I got a star in one place, and in Cleveland they only give one star, and I got the star, and I had 4 points in five games, and I was plus five. I was so happy. So now we go to Cincinnati for our first game, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. I'm all set. There's Reggie Fleming playing on the other club. I was a pretty tough guy, but I was 36 years old. But to make the club, I'd have fought Marvelous Hagler. I'd fought anybody. And I remember him coming to me in the lobby and said, "You're not playing tonight." And I got tears in my eyes. And I remember going over in the lobby, and I remember those Hummel. Remember those Hummel little
yep.
Yeah, I had it on. I was looking at them because I felt so bad. Anyhow, we got smoked that night. I was happy.
That's right.
anybody that is naive enough to think that if you're not playing and the team gets beat that night, you got to let on you're unhappy.
Oh, well, it's all about the team.
Yeah, but bullshit. That's all bullshit. You're just so happy when they lose. So anyhow, I played a little. Then I come back and played. And when he phoned me, I wasn't making the trip south. I knew I was finished because when you're old like that, 36.
Well, they had an age rule there, didn't
they?
Well,
they had an age rule, too. But when you miss a game and you get out of the rhythm, and I lost the rhythm. And what was it like? Oh, and so I'm going to tell you what happened. So getting carried away here. Bobby Blackburn and I aren't playing. We're defense. They had that stupid rule. You couldn't play over 26. So him and I went out drinking. The only time I never phoned home and told Rose that I wasn't coming home right away was this night, because we'd have one. We'll have one more. We'll have one more. And then the first thing you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And
I can remember.
Yeah. And they'd been phoning. That night, Doug Adams had got corked by a fan. And we got hammered that night or something. And Doug You get driven by a fan. They hated the club. Anyhow, I didn't phone home. I come home, and Rose is waiting there for me, and she's just spitting. "They've been trying to get you since 11 o'clock. Well, I knew why they wanted me to coach, because they figured they're paying me. I'd take over as coach. I'd take all the heat and everything, and he didn't want to coach anymore. Doug Adams didn't want to coach anymore. So I said, "Don't worry, Rose, you know, half stiff and everything like that." And boy, was she mad. Boy, you ever embarrassed me? She was embarrassed, you know, where you don't know where your husband is till 2 o'clock in the morning. So I went to a little diner, and I remember I had a piece of apple pie, and I got made coach, and halfway through it, because I was, you know, I remember behind the guy standing behind me. A reporter asked him, "How do you think Cherry will do as coach?" And I remember him saying, "Who knows?" He said, "They're hired to be fired." And I was fired, so I might as well keep on going. So he calls me, and we only missed it by 1 point.
Yeah, you guys took off right after that.
We took off. I'm in the first three games we lose, and it was the headlines in the paper, "Cherry still winless." Oh, I remember, because I never wasn't used to anything like that. And then we took off, and we only missed it by 1 point. 1 point. And I remember Doug Adams coming in. I'm not going to knock the goalies that there was, and Lynn Zimmerman. He said, "Well, you have to play the rookie tonight." And I said, "Well, I don't want. I'm not." He said, "Well, I don't need him." He said, "Well, we have to play him." I remember the guy's name. I'm not going to mention it. And in the warm up, I'm sitting. I remember sitting in. I know the dressing room. I'm sitting in the chair. I never watched the warm up. And the trainer come in, Nate D'Angelo come in, and said, "Zimmy's got a broken hand." I said, "I know who did it. It was a rookie." And Zimmy was kind of, it was relaxed, you know, and taking it easy. And the guy drove the puck in too high, and he broke his hand. So now I have to play the other goal. And unbeknownst to me, I found out later that he had a $10,000 bonus. If he hadn't played this extra game, he was going to collect a $10,000 bonus, $5,000 to $10,000. I forget what it was. Anyhow, we outshot them. Remember that, Tim? 17-1. 17-1.
In the third period.
In the third period, we outshot them 17-1, and we lost. We lost out.
They scored on the one shot. And that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. And so I'm listening, one shot, and they scored. And Floyd Smith was the for Cincinnati. He played his backup goalie, which I was the killer, because when you pay your backup goalie, he's going to play.
Well, he probably thought he was doing you a favor because you
he
and
was.
Floyd,
well, of
Floyd
course
Smith,
he was doing me a favor.
Floyd Smith was, and you were good friends from from Hershey.
He was doing, and they didn't need it. They were in first base. They were
because he married his wife
Audrey
and mom.
Audrey Deck Dan
They were both Hershey ladies.
That's another story you should tell. But anyhow, we out 17-1. So I've been called in Tuesday. This is a true story. I got called in. I remember he was sitting. He was a good-looking guy, and he had a little cigar, a little wee cigarillo, and he takes it off, and he says, "Don, we're making a change in your department." As honest to God, for about 2 seconds, I thought, "Who the heck is in my department? It's me." So I said, "Well, thank you very much." You know, I never in the movie it showed me getting mad and stuff like that. I never got mad. So as I'm leaving, the secretary starts snickering because they didn't like me. And the PR guy, I know their names, but I'm not going to say it. They start snickering. So I go out and I close the door. And then, you know, I go back and I said, "You know, you shouldn't ever laugh at me when something happens to me because I'm like a bad penny. I'll come back." And sure enough, well, that's another story. Anyhow,
it's another story, and I could tell what
long,
happened.
Long one like this. But the question was, what would I ever do? I was very happy to be working on construction. Jackhammer was my specialty. I was pretty strong. I would have been a construction worker if I hadn't made a comeback and the Lord hadn't jumped in. But now I'm going to say what I would have liked to have been, but I didn't have enough education about what I would have loved to have been. I would have loved to have been a policeman. I really would have been a policeman to me and a fireman and the soldiers, but the policeman to me, I think more of the policeman than I think more of anybody else.